Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to Institute for Personal Development, where total consciousness is the new frontier. Kriya Yoga is the union of the individual with the divine. Join us as we explore the practices that initiate this process.
Good morning. Welcome to the Voice of Yoga. Let's Talk Consciousness. I am your hostess, Lisa Winton, and with me is Kenny Toy, also known as Swami Jayananda, founder of Institute for Personal Development, located here in Hampton, New Hampshire. Good morning, Swami. Thank you for being here today. How are you?
Good morning. I'm doing pretty good today. How about you?
I'm doing great on this fabulous moon day. It's a little cloudy, but still it's a wonderful day in the neighborhood. And I want to thank you, listeners, for tuning in. Today on The Voice of Yoga, we will be talking about Kriya Yoga as union with the divine. The eight essential stages of Kriya Yoga are a complete holistic health management system that translate into a path of action, a path of knowledge, and a path of devotion. These lifestyle strategies are designed to initiate a process in physiological, psychological, spiritual development that unfolds in three phases: pre-personal or unconscious awareness, personal or self-conscious awareness, and transpersonal or superconscious awareness. Total consciousness is the goal of yoga. Join our Kriya Yoga Spiritual Advance to get the light in your soul and unlock your hidden potential. So, Swami, you have a course that's called the Kriya Yoga Theory 1 class, and in it you say that this course is called the Human Development and the Eight Essential Stages of Kriya Yoga, and that the purpose of the classes are to provide clear understanding of the goals and objectives that are affiliated with the science of yoga. And what I like that you also say is that the information that you have shows what our potentials are as a human being and what is required of us to actualize this hidden power. I think that is such a powerful statement right there. So can you further explain to us about what exactly are these essential stages and what are they designed to do? How can we unlock this hidden potential?
Well, like we said in the opening, they're practices, but they are designed to do something. And I think what's really important to understand is that when yoga was codified, when they wrote it down, it was done so in eight stages. Now, the important thing to understand here is that these are essential. It's not like a list of options. It's not like you can just take one or two of these recommended practices and get the same return. That they are what we call sequential, that they do build on each other. And if you don't understand the importance of, say, for example, the yamas, the abstentions, and how they fit into this master plan, then, of course, it's kind of like what C.S. Lewis said. You know, if you're driving somewhere and you miss your turn, that to continue going in the direction that you're going may not get you closer to your destination. So it's very important when you're putting together a practice of yoga that you understand that it was codified in eight stages. And if what you're being taught isn't presented in eight stages, then it really shouldn't be called yoga, because it starts with this union of the individual with the divine. And without this connection, really nothing happens, because the practices are designed to initiate a process. And I think that's what's really unique and different about our approach to yoga, is that we really focus on the physics of spirituality. We focus on the evidence procedure of the process. Mm-hmm. And initiation here isn't just a secret handshake. You're not just joining some sort of organization. That it's an initiation of this progressive cycle where matter and mind literally come together with new information, and your identity begins to realign itself with a part of yourself that is expansive and eternal. And that's a real experience.
So are you saying that, first of all, we have to have this awareness that we're something more than this physical body? We have to strive to make this connection first before we can do anything?
Well, see, that's the beauty of the science of yoga, is that they do have their own physiology. They have their own psychology, their own philosophical framework. See, that's one of the things we always talk about, is the concept of a trinity, of a multidimensional reality system. But we don't just talk about it in terms of the Father, the Son, the Holy Spirit, Brahman, Vishnu, Shiva, Earth, Olympus, the underworld. We talk about it in terms that we understand. There are three dimensions that we visit every day: the waking state, the dream state, and the dreamless state. And to understand that we are complex beings is an important part, because these practices, as we said in the opening, they translate into a path of action. Things that we can and we must do. They're a path of knowledge. There are things that we must know. And then, of course, this path of devotion.
So once we are embroiled in these eight essential stages, and to me it sounds like it's not just a foundation, it's like a blueprint to actualizing our human potential. So it's not just the fact that we know what the stages are. Now we have to understand what the stages are, what they can do for us, and then actually employ those strategies.
And then look for the signposts, the changes that should take place. Because, say, for example, I think the biggest and the most misunderstood concept in the yoga community today is your fifth yama, which is brahmacharya, carrier of Brahman. And so many people think brahmacharya means being celibate. And that's just kind of like what we were talking about last week, how we try and go about doing things kind of ass backwards. You know, so people will try and restrict the instinct and the appetite of the body in hopes of getting some sort of spiritual benefit from this. When in fact, brahmacharya means carrier of Brahman. And it's really not until the individual internalizes this resource, this dimension of reality, this source of sustenance into the body, are you able to manage the instincts and the appetites of the body. So it's kind of like trying to do something, say for example, like cut a tree down with a chainsaw without starting it up. You know, we'll do that later. First let's cut down the tree, then we'll start up the saw. And of course, if you understand the analogy of what I'm trying to say, that's how most people go about yoga. And the science of yoga is just so exact. And what's really interesting is that, you know, when you research the yamas, non-injury, non-lying, non-stealing, non-greed, non-sensuality, and you start to see how they target these obstructions to what was called enlightenment, fear, ignorance, laziness, and selfishness. And you start to see that following the yamas are the niyamas. And your first niyama is shaucha, which is purification. You know, because with the physics of spirituality, you can't get this concept of Brahma into your body. You can't get the life force into the body if you do not purify it. That's the physics of spirituality. Like attracts like. And of course, you know, why aren't they employing purification first? You know, because that was one of the things that I always thought, you know, well, purification should come first before brahmacharya. But if you really think about it, you know, all the power comes from the body, and the physical body is like a monkey. And a monkey won't let go of one branch unless it has another branch in the other hand. So in order to make this union with the divine a relatively seamless transition, you really want to get this other branch in your other hand before you try and leap into the other tree. If you understand, and it's just such an amazing science, like I said, how everything works sequentially together.
So that's what you said before, that it's actually a systematic step, it's a procedure, and if you follow those steps in order, there's a reason for it, because one step will prepare the body or the mind for the next step, I think is how I'm analyzing that.
Oh yeah, and then, like I said, when you really analyze yoga and you start to understand, like I said, that its practice is designed to do something. And your first four stages of yoga, the yamas, the niyamas, asana, and pranayama, they're really your practices. They'll translate into your path of action, your path of knowledge, and your path of devotion. But it's the last four stages of yoga, pratyahara, dharana, dhyana, and samadhi, which is sense withdrawal, it is concentration, it's meditation, and it's illumination. That these are the same practices that are experienced at different levels of consciousness, different degrees of awareness. You know, so even say, for example, a simple concept like meditation. Most people think meditation is an activity that they do independent of life. But by definition, meditation is the seventh stage of yoga. It's the eighth stage of Buddhism. Meditation is a state of being. You don't meditate. You do whatever it is that you're doing in a meditative state, which really means that your mind has opened. But without this internal connection with the divine, matter and mind do not grow in a positive direction. So if you understand that it's a practice that initiates this process, the total consciousness is it's a real experience. And it's not just something that, you know, a string of words that you throw out to, you know, add some sort of flair to trying to get your foot on your head, you know.
So if somebody says to me, well, you know, I do yoga, you know, Wednesday nights I do yoga, or Thursday mornings, or whatever the case may be, I do yoga three times a week, you know, when do you do it? And I said, well, I try to do yoga every day, every minute of the day. So I guess it's a different philosophy. People associate yoga as just doing postures and not realizing that's only one of the eight essential stages. But then you're also saying, too, that even if you are doing postures, to really realize it, you need to be doing your postures in another form of consciousness.
Yeah. Your level of consciousness, your degree of awareness, of course, is the goal. And in fact, even a lot of the asana, that postures that we do today, I mean, people say this is a 5,000-year-old system of exercise. And in reality, it isn't. That the only postures that are mentioned in the Yoga Sutras are the meditative postures. And even in the Hatha Yoga Pradipika, there's probably only about 64 postures that are utilized in that work. But most of what we do really today began with Krishnamacharya, who worked with the British gymnasts in the early 1900s, where they actually found that people had terrible misalignments. And it was B.K.S. Iyengar who really brought that concept, I think, to the foreground. Because with our Western socialization, you know, we're constantly seeking external reinforcement to the extent that we sit in chairs, that we don't have the same, I want to say, lifestyle that we did when yoga was codified 2,200 years ago, where people sat on the floor, you know, they worked in the fields. And the other aspect is the whole thing of psychologically and spiritually, we're not using what we need as an image to validate ourselves.
All right, well, I think it's about that time we need to pause to hear a word from our sponsors. So, listeners, we will return with you shortly, and then we'll have some more information to partake in. So we'll be back with you in a moment.
Om Purnamadaha Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudashyate.
If you are looking for a samadhi-based experience, IPD Kriya Yoga has the goods. A complete yoga program that includes the practices and the process. Starting with the separation from mother, including the labors and tasks of the hero and the return as a whole person. Practice makes perfect only when practice is whole. Kriya Yoga is a path of action, knowledge, and devotion. Samadhi, or total consciousness, is experienced by knowing and doing with devotion. Call or click now and get started. 603-929-0303 or www.ipdtransform.com. Namaste.
And welcome back. For those of you just joining us, you're listening to The Voice of Yoga, and we are talking consciousness. So, Swami, at this time, I'd like to open up the phone lines to our listeners, and maybe they may have some questions for you about the eight essential stages and maybe in their own practice. So, listeners, if you have any questions, you can shout them out. So, Swami, I have a question for you that I've been thinking about on last week when preparing for the program today. And my question is, I was studying with another yoga philosophy, and in that philosophy they were saying that if I just meditated on the guru, that his energy would help me to actualize my own level of consciousness and kind of boost up a level. And I know there's another gentleman out there that claims to do the same thing, that if you just, you know, tune in to his presence and his energy field, that can help elevate your level of consciousness. So my question is actually twofold, is what do you think about that? And B, understanding that energy is all around us, is that even a possible situation? Is that even possible to even do?
Well, to answer your questions, I think the spiritual world communities today are filled with what the Yoga Sutras called avidya, ignorance, which is mistaking the impermanent for the permanent. And one of the things that we're very clear about here is that reality is multidimensional, that there are three different dimensions of reality, two of which are dualistic and very limited. And of those two, matter and mind, or particles and waves. So the realms of energy is really a resource of energy that's dualistic. It's invisible, but it is tangible and verifiable on some level. And so the whole intention of yoga and spirituality was to connect to this one true God, this indivisible unified field, our number one need. And anything that would distract you, and that's one of the reasons why a lot of our religions fail so badly, is because we don't know what we're trying to do. And so we follow this type of instruction. And it kind of always reminds me of years ago, I was watching somebody trying to remove a part from a car. And they were struggling and pulling and cursing and swearing. And I looked under and I said, you know, there's, you know, two other bolts holding that part on. And the person just started cursing and swearing at me. And I thought, well, you know, have at it. Good luck. And that's kind of what the way I feel about people that try and worship people or images of any kind, that it isn't going to give you what it is that you're looking for or what the books are promising that you'll get. That it's really, there's only one way that this goes right. There's only one God. There's only one truth. There's only one number one need. There's only one religion. And everything else was what they called a sin. It missed the mark.
I remember reading in a book, I think it was like a daily meditation book or something like that, and then the author suggests that you make an altar and you put it in a corner of your room somewhere, and so that when it is time for your meditation, the actual lighting of the candle and the incense and all this other stuff that she recommended you do at this altar would prepare you, you know, for this meditation. And then years later, I read from somebody else, and they said, you don't need to do all that. That's just a preparatory work that, you know, doesn't mean anything, because that's not how you're going to get your, that's not how you're going to get the connection. That's not the words they use, but I'm using your word. That's not, you don't need to do all that preparatory work to have this connection to your spirit. What do you think about those two things, about A, you know, having an altar and meditating before this altar on a daily basis, or B, it doesn't matter where you do it as long as you have this connection. The physical part of it doesn't really matter.
Well, to answer your question, I think there is certain amount of value to ritual and the physical part initially. And then, of course, you have to understand, again, it's a practice that is designed to do something. And if it doesn't do what it was intended to do, which is connect you to something that's invisible and intangible, and if you don't feel connected to this life force, then, of course, you don't get the yoga part. You don't get the power that comes with the internal support of this indivisible unified field. And so you want to be very careful that, you know, the Tibetans have this saying, you need the finger to point to the moon, but it is woe unto them who mistaken the finger for the moon, for you shall never understand the bright light of the moon nor what the finger is, which is what you see happening in most of our spiritual communities today. People talk spirituality, but in reality, they're still attached to resources of energy that are not producing what the books promise. You know, this expanded sense of self, this transformation, where you literally separate from one source of sustenance and reconnect to another. And so once you have a clear understanding of what it is that you're trying to do, then I think having those rituals and having that practice kind of gives you a framework, because it's so easy to get pulled off course.
So you're saying, so it is okay to, you know, to get yourself kick-started to, you know, to have a place and create a space for yourself so that you can engage in this kind of an activity. And then sooner or later, you don't need that. It's kind of like putting training wheels on a bicycle. You know, you might need it in the very beginning, but then once you've mastered, you know, how to ride a bike, you don't need the training wheels anymore. So is that kind of like what you're saying, that we don't really, after a while, you just don't need to have that particular process?
Yeah, and then just think about it. I mean, even riding a bicycle, you know, you might not need training wheels, but you're going to need balance. Mm. And so constantly riding and using, you know, that activity, it hones your skill in it. And the same thing with the spiritual practice, you know, that you really want to. I mean, and of course, there will be varying degrees of changes that this practice will undertake. But for the most part, you really want to maintain the structure and form of the, you know, daily devotion and dedication that it takes. Because, you know, there's this old saying, practice makes perfect only when practice is perfect. And so understanding that the intention of this practice is to join me with this other source of sustenance, with this resource that is unchanging, is of the utmost importance. And when you cross-examine the eight essential stages of yoga, you see how the genius of how it was all put together in a way that, you know, they really left no stone unturned. And especially, you know, things in the Yoga Sutras like constant practice of detachment or continuous control of the thought variations of the mind. And those are things that most people in most yoga classes I've been to, people refer to that as good luck with that. And if you don't understand brahmacharya, then of course those things are literally impossible. Mm. Like, there is no such thing as constant practice of detachment. Right. You know, but when you have a attachment to the life force, then constant practice of detachment from particles and waves is very doable.
And I think those are the two things that I think most practitioners, most yogis do struggle with. And attending the Siri 2 class on Thursday nights at 7, you know, we're able to talk about those things that we struggle with, and, you know, trying to, you know, keep ourselves on this path. So it looks like it is about that time for us to start closing down our show for today. So listeners, I'd like to invite you to visit our website. You can follow Swami on Pinterest and Twitter and, of course, on Facebook. And be sure to visit the site. It's www.ibdtransform.com. Once there, you can post comments about this show or any ideas you may have for future shows you'd like us to consider. And do keep those comments and questions and curiosities coming, because Swami does enjoy hearing from you. And be sure to tune in next week. We'll talk about next week's full moon and celebrate Earth Day. And you can mail me at lisa@ipdtransform.com with any questions that you would like Swami to answer. So, Swami, any more final thoughts or comments about our show today?
Well, I would like to caution people about watered-down yoga, modified, diluted, and in a lot of self-made systems that have sprouted up, that they usually are going to affect the outcome of what it is that you're trying to do. And not to get misled by something that it would be to your advantage to research these eight essential stages of yoga to make yourself an educated consumer. Mm. And with that, I would like to wish everybody a good day. Namaste, and I'll give it back to you.
And thank you for listening to our program, The Voice of Yoga. This is Lisa Winton along with Swami Jayananda signing off. Have a wonderful Kriya Yoga kind of day. Namaste.